I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the On The Box podcast, a television show podcast on the Anfield Index podcast channel. Whew! I'm back again this week. Yeah, it's two in 2 weeks. Wow, fantastic. We're getting there. We're getting back into that rhythm, yes. And this week we're going to cover an absolutely brilliant show, Master of None. And I can't really do this show without having somebody from New York. And the best person to get on from New York is the man from LFCNY, the host of the American AI podcast, or AI podcast USA, whichever way you want to call it. It's Mr. Justin Wells. How are you doing, Just?
Doing all right, Gags. Not only is it New York, I'm so hyper local to this that I actually live down the block from where it's shot.
That's
so
nuts, man.
It's super, crazy. Super hyper local.
Yeah. Yeah, super. Like, there's no one better to come on this show than you. And then there's a debut as well today, DJ Jessel. How are you doing, DJ Jessel?
I'm fine, thank you, guys. How are you?
We call you Jess, is that right?
Yeah, that's fine.
That makes it easier. But your debut, you contacted me on Twitter. You've been commenting and listening to the shows for a long, long time. You've been commenting from, I don't know how long, years. Definitely years I've seen you on Twitter. And you said you love this show, so I could feel the vibe from me, how excited you were about it. So I said, come on then, let's do this.
Yeah, I'm absolutely excited. And thank you for inviting me on the podcast. I've been down with AI since pretty much week one or two of your inception,
wow.
Pretty much.
Wow, so
I'm an OG, as they say.
Oh, nice. Oh,
so you get references to understanding if people ask, does he have the balls?
That's the first show. That was the first show.
Yeah, okay, maybe I show number two then.
Yeah, the first show was, does Brendan have the balls?
Brendan.
Yes. Does he have the balls? Yeah. Well, that was not perfection in anticipation. Well done, Justin, for ruining that moment. But okay, we'll carry on. So what we do is, on the show, we always look at the television show that we're going to cover from a non-spoiler place, so that the guys that are listening and the girls that are listening, they can decide whether they actually want to watch this show or not, and let's try and sell it to them. So, you know what, Jessel, you're new, so tell me, non-spoiler wise, why did you know what's so good about the show that they should watch it?
Okay, so non-spoiler wise, Master of None, it's a kind of observational comedy. Yet it has various episodes that are kind of more standalone ones, which have nothing to do with anything, pretty much. And I'd say it's occasionally hilarious. It's got a lot of deep emotion in it, but it also skillfully interweaves a lot of sitcom elements with almost kind of new school European cinema. It's bizarre. And it's something I've never really seen done before yet. And Netflix has a lot to do with that, because they basically just throw money at whoever they want and let them do what they want. And it's quite an appealing way of doing things. They kind of leave the creativity to the people who know best. And as is Ansari, he was someone it took me a long time to warm to, I guess. My brother kind of introduced me to him a long time ago in his stand-up. I didn't think he was very funny. But then I kind of noticed him more along the years, and he's done a sterling job, it must be said, with Master of None. It's exceeded all of my expectations. And I mean, I guess what I'd say is the first season is kind of like, I'm a music guy, so I'd equate it to a debut album from a band where every song is basically like at least a 7 out of 10. It's solid. And then you've got like 3 or 4 songs, which are incredible, like the big singles. And then the second album, which is season 2, is absolutely brilliant. Like almost every song is just, I'd say, pretty close to perfection. And, you know, each episode is basically half an hour. So you're not taking a gigantic risk with your time. The whole, like Gags was saying yesterday when we were kind of talking, the whole thing is basically about 5 hours for a season, which you can kind of smash through in one night if you're really dedicated. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, it kind of interweaves a lot of things for, I kind of say like the millennial generation as well. And there's quite a lot of interesting things regarding races who don't normally get a lot of representation on TV, like brown people and Asian people and African people. So I think there's something for everyone there, definitely. It's definitely worth a watch.
I totally agree. I don't think it throws it in your face as well, the Indianness. So they dedicate a couple of episodes here and there to it. And what that does is, it did for me anyway, it kind of hooked me in because you can relate to it. So if you're an Indian that's born, you know, abroad, like so British Asians, for example, or just say Asians, not just Indians, you know, you can so relate to the things that they're saying, they're doing, the parents, how they behave, what happens. And it's just brilliant because I actually feel like he's telling, you know, his life story or at least playing on stories he's heard or experienced through friends or whatever. He's writing it, isn't he? Him and his friend Alan Yang, they're writing this. They work together, I think, on Parks and Rec, is it, as well. So it's so good, so interesting how he does everything in this. And being the star, I immediately, you said it took you a while. I found him hilarious immediately. Justin, I don't know what you think, but I totally find him just brilliant.
I love him. And I think a lot of it is just, you know, the humor of he's from where I am. A lot of the cultural references are very similar. I was a big fan of Parks and Rec. I was a big fan of his stand-up. So the show itself was just a natural transition to watch. And it, by the time I had started watching it, which was probably about like 2 or 3 weeks after season 1 had come onto Netflix, it already had like a decent critical response. And I don't like not watching something that seems like it's at least a phenomena of my particular generation, because then I feel left out of conversation. So in watching it, I was really able to identify with a lot of, because as I mentioned, a lot of it's shot where I am. I myself am not of Asian descent. I'm a Jewish kid from New York, but my girlfriend is of Asian descent. She's her parents are from Maharashtra in India, and she was born here. So there's the seeing her parents versus seeing Aziz's parents. Now, Aziz's father is a lot funnier than my girlfriend's father. If he ever listens to this, I apologize, Sriram, but yeah, he's funnier than you. But so there's a lot that I just kind of grasp that I'm able to identify with. And I also just think that it's extremely well written. It's extremely well shot. It's extremely sharp. So it's naturally something I would gravitate towards. And like DJ Jazz said, it's only a five hour commitment and you can power through it in one day. Season 2, I actually watched in one day all last Saturday, but that's just because the weather in the Northeastern United States last Saturday was particularly awful. So if you're kind of in my generation and you grew up in the U.S., really kind of the Northeastern U.S., you're going to probably understand a lot of the references.
I even think that if you're just, you know, if you're just in this generation, a lot of it you'll strike a chord with. You will. I just think if you're in the generation now, as Aziz is this age, I think there's a lot that you can relate to, a lot. And if you've gone to America a lot as well and visited a lot, you'll really love it. You really enjoy it. And it's just dead funny. Like some of the stuff he says about, well, wait up, if you have kids and stuff like this, how am I going to get time to go and eat pasta? You know, how am I going to get time to go and eat? Like, just, it's just so stupid at times, but it's just dead funny. And I just, I was drawn into it immediately because obviously some of the first episodes were like about not religion. I think it was about parents and kids and stuff like that. The first few, and they were just so well done, so funny as well. And it was really, really good. Anything else you guys want to add in terms of non-spoiler?
If I can jump in, I think Aziz Ansari, I mean, you guys were kind of, I guess, more fans for a long time. For me, I kind of caught up on Parks and Rec quite recently, about a couple of years ago. And I think with him, he's very brave in this particular show because he's not always likable. There are times when you're looking at him, you're thinking, there's times when I like you and there's times when you're just such a childish dick. And it's just like, come on, man, you know.
Yeah.
But actually, it's very brave to portray yourself like that, especially when you're writing and directing it, because there is that temptation to, you know, make yourself look good from all angles at all times and give yourself the best scenes and all this kind of stuff. But he doesn't do that at all. It's kind of like a team game almost. And I guess Alan Yang must have a lot to do with that as well, because you generally need two when you're writing something great, you know. And whether it's like Lennon and McCartney or the Neptunes, you know, it's kind of that kind of thing. I think there's a lot of teamwork between them. So
yeah, there's quite a few writers. There's a whole other list of writers as well that are involved. I mean, these two are the main two, but they have a team of writers too. So I think you need it to get some of the sensibilities in, you know, Italy and stuff, and then obviously different types of people that are in that, you know, you won't know everything, will you, in terms of cultures and whatever. You got to get other people, the writers, in to try and understand stories and because I think they nail everything. They really do nail the majority of things that's in this show. I don't actually look back and go, you know what, that's just totally bollocks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, there's nothing.
I think there's also it's also that, you know, you bring up Aziz Ansari. Like, I'm a fan of what I knew of Aziz Ansari before this, which is his stand-up routine and Parks and Rec and other bit parts he's done in things like, you know, Randy and Funny People. But that's not really who he is. That's him doing characters. And even up through his stand-up, it's still a character to a point. I mean, making jokes about I'm going to spoil a little bit of his stand-up that's not related to this because it's been out for 7 or 8 years. And if you haven't seen it at this point, the statute of limitations on spoilers on that piece has run out. But, you know, his stand-up is things like talking about going to see an R. Kelly concert and having sex with an invisible woman, or going to Kanye's house afterwards and being after a Kanye show and being asked to do jokes at an after party. Like, those are experiences that not a ton of people have. You don't really get a glimpse into how he's actually thinking. These are just good comedic situations. I think with Master of None, there's the element of comedy because there is some very funny aspects to it, but there's a lot more of an aspect of, this is more of who I am and how I grew up. Like, Dev Shah, Aziz's character, is so is a very thinly veiled version of Aziz.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's basing a lot of the storyline of the show is on his experiences, because when talking about a season three, he's actually come out and said that I need to go and experience something else before I can write another season of this, because I don't know where else I can go. Like, I need to go and get married and have a child or something like that, and then come back and write, which is then a 2-year, 3-year gap, because he's like, I need to experience something else in life, because I don't have anything else to give. So if you're looking for a season three, by the way, it's probably not going to happen for a long, long time on this show. So it kind of comes across like, you know, he's just putting it all out there, everything out there in terms of all of experiences. And it's really, really cool and really, really good. And I think what I want to say is just going to finish the non-spoiler section and going into some stats. So, not too much really. Still some para-analytic stuff. Great of them to send me some stats this week. Basically, we talk about demand expression, you know, the demand about this particular title in a market. So I've got US and UK this week, which is great. Thank you so much, It was Samuel who sent it to me from Power Analytics. Really appreciate this. And in the last week or so, obviously it's only just come out, there's been a massive, massive jump in demand. I mean, there's like 9 million people in the US either tweeting. So these demand expressions aren't just people that are watching. It includes tweets, blogs, like everything in terms of how many mentions it's getting here and there, how popular it is on a weekly basis. So 9 million demand expressions for Master of None. Yeah, last week. So it's mental. That's gone up. That's in the USA. 9 million in the last week. That's mad. And then in the UK, it's at 1.5 million. So demand expressions in the UK, 1.5. That's pretty impressive as well, if you ask me, for Master of None. Netflix are absolutely hammering it. So yeah, it's doing really well. If you look at all the ratings of this, like Rotten Tomatoes gave it 100% for both seasons so far, I think. It's crazy. I don't think there's anyone that's hated it in terms of a reviewer. So, you know what? If you're listening in and you're looking at this, this is a really popular show at the moment. The first season was really critically acclaimed. The only reason why I watched it last year and late last year was because whenever I went on Netflix, it was there and it was 5 stars. And then I went and researched it and it was like, yeah, this is amazing. This is great. I think Justin even mentioned it to me. You got to watch this show. It's really good. And when I did watch it, I just thought, wow, this is fantastic. And if you want to know all about the second season as well, we're going to talk about it in a second. So this is the point, guys, where you should really jump off the call. Sorry, not the call. Guys, stay. Jump off the pod, what you're listening to, and go and watch this show and then come back and get the rest of this, because we're going to totally spoil every storyline and all the characters. And I think that's a great place to start, guys. So we'll see you in a bit. But Justin, Jess, let's talk about the characters, because it's not just Aziz in this. It's not just Dev, right? The next one I think I go to or gravitate towards is it Arnold? Is it his mate?
Yeah.
Because Eric is, how I don't know how to say his surname.
Eric Wareheim.
Wareheim. He actually directs. He's directed like 5 episodes as well. So you know he's a really big part of this show, not just an actor but also director. So I actually think he's also hilarious. Some people may just actually hate him, but there's some really epic scenes of his. And there's one, I don't know if you guys remember this one, the one on the sofa when he's with Rachel, who's Dev's girlfriend, and she needs some help in terms of, you know, bargaining to buy a sofa. I don't know, can you remember that?
Oh yeah, it's from late middle of the first season.
Yeah. And basically he goes to her, he's really like, you know, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to be the bad cop and you're going to be the good cop. And when he goes in, he just behaves like a crazy person, and she has to sell it to the guy who's selling as if he's mental.
But that's what I love
brilliant.
About him.
He was brilliant. So
he's
funny.
The comic relief. There's very little that you see from him in the show where he's actually forced to put on a really, really serious face. I can really kind of only think of one spot, which is the wedding they go to in Italy in the second season, which is his ex-girlfriend's wedding, where, you know, she marries a man who looks exactly like him. It's kind of like the Klopp, mini Klopp thing.
It's so funny. It's so funny. It is so funny. He goes, he's marrying mini-me!
But even if you just look at him, I mean, he's just hilarious to look at. How tall is that guy? He must be at least 6'8", right?
He's about 6'7", 6'8".
6'7", yeah. And he's just hilarious. He's this big guy. He's got a gigantic beard. Him and Aziz are friends in real life as well. And you can tell that on-screen chemistry is real. And you're right. He doesn't really have too many serious moments, but you just look at him and he brings this sense of comic relief to the screen. He doesn't even have to say anything half the time. And they have all these stupid in-jokes and they'll start singing random chants to each other about food and stuff like that. And there's times when you're like, okay, you know, I'm being excluded from this. And there's other times you're like, this is just hilarious. So he's definitely welcome. He's a very funny character indeed, especially when he gets stuck in a Fiat in Italy and can't get out of the sunroof.
So it's one of the weird themes that I've noticed in this show is about friendship. And it kind of goes back to the first season and when the show was written. The original intent for the show was actually going to be co-written between Aziz Ansari and then Alan Yang and then also Harris Whittles, who's an American comedian who who died right before the show. Him and Aziz were actually going to move to New York together to start filming, to start working on something. And it's, I find that a lot of the elements of friendship that Aziz is working through in the show is also kind of a play on the fact that he does feel some sort of loss from losing a really close friend of his right before the show started.
Wow, didn't know that. That's quite sad as well, you know. There's, I don't know, there's more of a rom-com feel to the second season, a far more rom-com. I think this, I think the first season is just, I kind of, I don't know, it's not romantic, it's just telling you what happens in a relationship, really, isn't it? Towards the end, anyway, the last two episodes, it's just pure, you know, this is what happens when you're with someone and it kind of breaks down a little bit. But the second one's more, he's after this girl. And he wants it, and it's more of a. I found the second season to be much more romantic comedy. I don't know if you agree with that, Jess.
I think it. When I watched it, I was like, "Yeah, I think you're right." But then I went back and watched season one again because I've become completely obsessed over the past week, and then I started watching season two again. So I've basically in the last week watched season two twice and season two once, and I never do that about any kind of show, and. It's interesting. There are still actually quite a few set piece standalone episodes in season two. You know, there's the one which is New York,
oh
I Love
God.
You,
oh
which was
God,
incredible.
Yeah. This amazing ones.
And there's also the one which is Thanksgiving, which is about his friend
Denise.
And
That's
Denise.
That's fantastic
yeah, and,
as well. Is the New York I Love You one with the people that are deaf as well?
Yeah.
Yes.
That is so good. So
have you ever
good.
Seen that in anything ever? I mean, no. Like, where they just cut the sound for, like, what, 10 minutes or something?
He's
just cut
only
it.
In it for 1 second at the end, and it fits all together. It's hilarious. It's fucking hilarious. When I see his face, and then I see the other guy's face who's had it spoiled, the story spoiled, I'm just creasing.
And that's what I mean. I think there's a lot of representation for people who don't normally get that kind of shine. Yeah. Like a Rwandan immigrant who's a taxi driver. When is the last time someone like that would get 10 minutes of prime time on Netflix?
Never.
They just wouldn't, you know. Or even like, you know, the deaf girl who, and they just cut the sound out for 10 minutes. Again, that's a statement. That's saying, look, these people matter as much as Aziz Ansari. And they kill it. They're brilliant in that episode. Oh my God, the deaf girl. When the woman comes up to her in the shop and says, my children understand sign language, please stop saying vagina.
And
vagina.
They're running around quoting her. Oh no.
That's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
It's brilliant.
So I... Once again, they're just, you know, providing the relevance of where these things are. Exactly where that shop is. It's Fish's Eddy near Union Square in Manhattan. I could see that conversation happening in there. That's probably actually happened in there before.
Mad, Justin. I mean, what did you think, Justin, out of, you know,
The New York I Love You episode was my favorite one in the
yeah.
season. I'm like being totally because of the fact that
they're not even in it.
You know,
no one's in it. None of them are in it.
I've been in the situation where I've had someone ruin a movie for me that everybody wanted to go see, and I still went to go see it, and it was a terrible experience because all the joy of the movie had been sucked out of it for me. And then also, I have tried getting into that club that they got rejected from too, and that was a waste of time as well.
But
is that a real club?
It is. That is a real club called One Oak. Strangely enough, one of my friends from college actually DJed there on Saturday nights for about 5 or 6 years.
It's a real
sceney place. Like, I don't really like going out to bars or clubs very often because they're too loud and there's too many people and I'm not good looking enough. But it's just that type of place. Like, the people who go in there are, like, you know, professional athletes constantly are in there. A pitcher for the New York Mets, you know, had a rough day where that was, you know, the scene of it last week. So they really do a good job of actual location scouting on this show as far as types of places people would go and would not get into. And, like, One Oak is kind of one of those places.
It's amazing. I mean, let's talk more characters. Is there anything else you guys want to add on Arnold?
Yeah, not really. I think he's a pretty two-dimensional character, isn't he? He's not given the chance to... Like, he hasn't had his own episode yet or anything like that, whereas Denise has and Aziz's parents and Brian Yang's father have and stuff like that. But Arnold's not really had anything... Apart from maybe the sofa, and even then he's really kind of like OTT comic relief then, isn't
and
he?
And his granddad as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh, his granddad is amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, his granddad. He's in it more than all the... Only Denise, I think, is probably in it more than Arnold, to be honest. But I find him, he's just, like you said, the comic relief. He's always the one that's talking some shit. And it just, I love him. I absolutely love him. Right then, okay, Justin, next one. Denise, your thoughts on Denise?
I loved it. She is, I think, a character who I did not have a ton of time for earlier to the Thanksgiving episode, mainly because of the fact that she was just kind of there. You get into the fact that, you know, Aziz's group of friends represent a wide swath of different cultures, you know, but black lesbianism is one that definitely does not get a ton of play in major American or pretty much any real media. It's not like a widely seen fictional character. I mean, I'm trying to think of any, you know, widely known black lesbian characters I can think of from mainstream TV. And the only thing that comes to mind is Kima Greggs from The Wire. And it kind of, you know, it's not really a part of her personality that they explore in lengths of really trying to get to the roots of how she came from a child to this point. I thought the Thanksgiving episode, where you really learn about Denise, her family, you know, what it's like for her to bring girls home, Dev always being there with her. I think you learn so much about her, and you learn so much about some of the difficulties that that exist, I guess, in black culture for with being gay. Because I can't pretend to know what it's like to be black in America, but I know that it's not exactly easy.
Oh, no, not at all. And it's some insight into it, isn't it? And that's what that episode was so good about, the Thanksgiving one, how, you know, over the years, how her relationships were going. And then in the end, how the one that she bought the first time round, you know, that there was a massive change towards her. And it was so, like, it was so awkward, wasn't it, to watch? You were like, oh, and Aziz was hilarious because he would just like,
nipples and toes 23. Nipples. Hang on, is that nipples and toes 23?
Can you type it? Can you spell it? Yes, it's NIP. Oh my god, you're just like, stop us. Just brilliant, man. They brought across loads of things. Like, obviously, it was a struggle for Denise. That's what she was struggling with. She was struggling with admitting it, coming out, and then also the mother not being able to accept it. It was really hard, but they showed it really well. And in the end, the way she said, I'm happy for you. It was such a beautiful scene, actually. It was a really, really nice scene. Done really well. Managed really well. Directed perfectly. I just thought, what a lovely end to that episode. Again, Aziz was just a side note in that episode, really. He wasn't the main guy. And I love that as well, that, you know, they can take the main star and just sideline him for a bit. It was just great. I mean,
yeah, and I think with Denise's character as well, it's really rooted in reality, because often I think lesbianism is kind of fetishized. Is that the right word? Fetishized, you know what I mean? They're kind of, people make a fetish. Yeah. Whereas she's just a really kind of down to earth, straight talking friend of his who doesn't take any shit, who's always on his back about stuff. And it's almost like the lesbianism is secondary unless she brings it up, and then you see it through her own eyes, not kind of what I guess Hollywood would kind of normally make it. So she's quite a kind of new, unique character. And I don't think her character was supposed to be like black or gay, but then they ended up rewriting the whole thing. So I think that's quite interesting. You don't, again, this is something you don't really see, like Justin was saying, you don't really see a lot of it, you know? So, I think it's kind of just breaking down boundaries, isn't it?
It is, definitely. And in the first season, you don't get to know much of her. You just see her as this hard, you know, this character that's just one of his friends that's really got an attitude all the time and just knows, you know.
She's the one who will talk shit to him.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And tell him straight, like, you know. I think in this season, she took him to a party and stuff, and she was like, you're my friend, why can't you go? I want you to meet my colleagues. And then when you got there, yeah, that was Thanksgiving one, wasn't it? Yeah, see you later, mate. I'm going to go pull this girl. See, just too funny. She had some funny parts to her as well, but she's mainly just like, she's got no humor, has she? There's no, it's just whatever, Dev, whatever. She's not, it's like, that's all Arnold. But then Brian, Now, he wasn't in the season two very much at all, like really sparingly, right. Wasn't he?
Yeah.
But I didn't really get much from him anyway, Jess, in terms of season one. Like, his dad was better than him, like, as a character.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's barely on it. He's in Parents, which is episode number two of season one, and he has a pretty prominent role. After that, you're right, he's barely in it. In season two, he makes like a very fleeting appearance and stuff, so...
It says six episodes. Really? Was he? I suppose he was in a lot of the first season, five episodes. He must have been half of them, because he was hanging out with them a lot as well, wasn't he, Justin?
He was. I mean, it's one of those things though. He's there, but I don't feel like his character has an impact on Dev's character development in a way some of the other characters like Arnold or Denise or Rachel, or for that matter, actually even Ravi, who kind of really disappears in season two. He's only ever the party at Chef Jeff's house.
Episode in season one as well, though, really, isn't he? I mean, it's a big one because it's to do with the TV execs and that email.
Yeah, typecasting Indian characters. Yeah,
which is hilarious. Oh, my God, what a brilliant episode, season.
That was one of the best things I've ever seen in my life.
It was so good. Like, again, like I said, for the Asian community, you, it just hooks you. It just grabs you in. All of those episodes, just like, wow, I so relate to this. But obviously he's an actor and two of them. And then the guy that's just like, you know, got a body.
Carbs are my enemy, bro.
Yeah, the bimbo. He's just fucking hilarious as well. And he keeps talking to him because that's what Asians do sometimes. They look for confirmation from someone. So he kept on looking to confirmation from him, wasn't he, when he was talking to him? Do you know this guy? No, never heard of him. He just kept asking the question. Oh, it was just funny. Sorry, Justin. But
I actually just have one quick Robbie thing. I couldn't stop laughing at the party at Chef Jeff's house. Yeah. With him first coming in a tuxedo and being confused for a waiter. And then also handing out the business card that like doesn't fit in someone's wallet.
Oh my God. It was so good. So, so good. He was very good, Ravi, though, to be honest. And like I said, though, they don't overuse the characters. They're as impactful, bang, bang. And look, we're talking about him because he was a good character that served his purpose. You know what I mean? Because that's a brilliant episode. Both of those episodes were great, actually, that he was in. So, like I said, Brian wasn't very impactful. So let's move on to love interests. Let's stick with Justin. The first season was Rachel. What did you think of her? Because she was obviously in the first episode with him. And at that point, you probably think, right, I'm never going to see her again.
I mean, that's an awkward interaction when the first episode, the first thing you're seeing
really
is
awkward.
Going out to have to go by Plan B. that's a situation nobody really ever wants to find themselves in to begin with. So it's a super awkward beginning where you're maybe thinking like, okay, so this isn't going to be a slapstick comedy because you can't start a slapstick comedy that way. Like, I hate saying this because it's going to sound stupid and trite, but like accidental pregnancy or Plan B or that type of thing, that's some real life shit that nobody wants to deal with.
Yeah, man, definitely. It's scary stuff, especially the situation where his condom breaks, obviously. So he's like, oh shit. And then they're Googling stuff. And he's like, yeah, but because I did this before, and she's like, no.
But what she is she's actually like the exemplification of like, yeah, I guess Brooklyn circa 2015 to 2017 hipster attractiveness.
Yes, definitely. She was, she was nice. I did think she was nice, and it was a nice character, and I just thought it was hilarious how he became like such a clean freak and everything, you know, in his apartment. And that's where it kind of, he's really anal about lots of things, isn't he, Devshaw? And that's where I think things start to go bad for him. But she was a great guy. Jess, what did you think of Rachel?
It's funny, when I watched the first season, I really liked her, actually. I thought she was kind of, yeah, like Justin's right, she's kind of that hipster, ironic, you know, sarcastic kind of person for large swathes of it. But then it ends up all being really grounded in realism. You know, like you were saying, Dev becomes a bit of a dick about being clean in the apartment and stuff like that. And they do start bickering a lot more. And that's very realistic. You know, when you move in with someone, it's a huge shock for both parties, because while one person is being very territorial about their place and the other one feels like they're just a guest who could be kicked out at any point. And these are the kind of arguments that do happen in real life. So I think she got some great lines and she got some great screen time as well. She does come into it quite late, because I think she comes in from kind of the second half of the season onwards, from Nashville onwards, I think, aside from that first episode. But she has a lot of great material. I mean, once we get to the other love interest in season two, then that one obliterates my memory of Rachel in pretty much every way. So, those are my kind of initial thoughts on Rachel, I guess.
Well, it's interesting though, because once you get to Francesca, she also obliterates Dev's real knowledge or view of Rachel. I mean, in the season two finale, he runs into her on the street, and he kind of forgets who Rachel, like, doesn't even notice her for a second.
Yeah, it's mad. It's crazy. She was only in it for like, what, a minute or so? 90 seconds maybe? And he was zoned out, totally zoned out while he was talking to her. So very, very interested. I thought she was really good for the first season. Everything went, I think it really ended it in an interesting place when she ran off, you know, and like the actor guy that he met when he was shooting the crazy movie, when he was a doctor, you know, the crazy scientist person, doctor or whatever, screaming that there's a virus. That guy he meets and he tells him, you know, oh, she's just run off to Japan. And he goes, wow, she really wanted to get far away from me. Like, ouch, just like pierce my heart and like stab me. And poor Dev, he's just like, he's got this baby face and these big eyes, hasn't he, at times when he's like really hurt. But I thought it was really good. Let's move, Justin, straight to Francesca, because she's hot, man. And not only that, that's her real accent.
I love her.
How can anyone not love her?
I will fight you both for her. I'll put that right there.
I guess my real question, though, about her character is, how much about Tile can one person possibly hear? Like, I would get my girlfriend talks to me about work a lot, and I think it's very, very easy to get bored hearing about somebody else, even if somebody you care about's work, constantly. And I remind her about that, and she yells at me for being an insensitive dick. But imagine if your entire world is Tile.
Yeah, you're going to get bored, man. And that's why...
Very bored.
And that's why she kind of ended up falling for him, because he was fun. And that's what she saw of someone who is always willing to go out. And I mean, what does Dev do in the two seasons? He goes out and eats. That is pretty much what Dev Shaw does. And then the second season, he does what?
He hosts a TV show about a cupcake battle.
Yeah, like, what the fuck is that? Hilarious. And it just, the whole of his life is about food. And obviously, that's where he bumps into it. He bumps into it because he leaves America, New York, sorry, at the end of season one, goes to learn how to make pasta and stuff. And that's where he meets her, in Italy. And I mean, Jessel, the start of season two is just amazing, isn't it? Like, you're just like, whoa, this is different.
It really is. And it's heavily indebted to Italian cinema from the kind of, especially the kind of 60s era, I guess. And it's all shot in black and white, the first episode, and then it switches to color. And there are so many lovely touches. I think it's even based on the Bicycle Thieves, the first episode. And the moment, I guess the moment you see Francesca, you're just kind of hoping. She just lights up the screen and you're kind of hoping, please come back, please come back. Because she's only in it, you know, for kind of fleeting moments in the first episode. And then in the second episode, it gets a bit more. And I think the Italy episodes were done very well, especially the first episode. And then Arnold comes in the second one. And it again, it's a bit more kind of, I guess, comic relief. And as Justin was saying, that kind of one really serious moment that he has. But as for Francesca, I mean, she takes over the season, to be honest. She dips out of it from episodes, I think, 3 to 4 or around that kind of time. But then after the second half...
Maybe more than that, I think. She's gone for 3 or 4, and then she pops up right towards the second half, like 6. Yeah. She's back in 6, but then they
She comes in the dinner party, and then it goes to New York, I Love You, and then she kind of comes back for like the run-in. So, yeah.
And there's one episode that's actually an hour long, the penultimate one. It's actually 55, 60 minutes, which is the one that's the pure romance one between the two when they're stranded and they're snowed in and all that stuff goes on. And they, it just, that was a very, I found, that's a, that was such a feel-good kind of episode. I don't know what you guys said. Justin, what did you think of that one? Because it was something different because they never got an hour, because I was like, whoa, this should have finished ages ago. And then I looked, I was like, whoa, it's got another 25 minutes left. What's going on?
I think the hardest thing to do in anything, television, movies, even literature, is come up with an interesting way to keep two characters in one setting for a prolonged time, because it's the easiest way to fail. Because, I mean, if you think about it, if you're at home with your wife and kids, or, you know, I don't know about your domestic situation, so I can't guess this, but I know my girlfriend and I are home, you know, on a day where it's snowing all day and we've been sitting there without anything to do, you know, we're not going to talk the entire time. Sometimes we're just going to stare at a TV, do nothing, and really not have very engaging conversations. So the ability to make that come across as if it's organic and it's not like manufactured, being like, oh yeah, let's just put these two into a situation where there's nothing but sexual tension, but never have it slip over. It's difficult.
So difficult, but they manage it, and you feel like saying, just get together, will ya? But then they're doing these dancing things, you know, they're doing all these things while they're there, and they're like, can't sleep. It was just dead cute. I found that episode dead cute. I thought it was really good. Jess, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll counter Justin's point a little bit, because I think you're right if you're in a kind of long-term relationship or anything, but these are the kind of the initial flickers of the fire between the two, and there's a lot of sexual tension there because they haven't done anything yet. I mean, up till that point, they haven't even kissed or anything like that. So that's why I think it is, you know, taking back to when I used to be single and everything, then those are the kind of moments where you don't switch the TV on and just sit and binge watch Netflix, which is the kind of thing you do when you're married. If you were snowed in, it is romantic. You would stay up all night talking. You would do these kind of crazy things, or at least I used to, I guess, when I was young. But that's why I think it is so captivating. It really reminds me, a lot of it reminds me of one of my favorite films, which is, it has Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy in it. So there's a trilogy called Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight. And it's about this American guy and a French girl, and they meet on a train, and then you see them in 9-year intervals. And this is what I mean. It's got a really kind of European experimental cinema feel to it at times. And that's why I think her casting was so great. I think, if she'd been an American actress, it could have worked perfectly well, but I think this brings a whole different dynamic to it. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I totally agree. There's an innocence to her. There's also a vulnerability to her. She's also somebody who wants to kind of leave her country. If she was American-based Italian, she'd be to New York, and there was that vulnerability about her that she doesn't know things in the city. So he was kind of like her guide as well. And he knows exciting places. I mean, she showed him one really nice place, didn't she, upstate, where they went to this museum, outdoor museum type thing, which was a great, I think it was the same, it was the same episode.
Storky, which, by the way, just a total aside, yeah, anybody who listens to this, who is in New York, if you have any bit of time, it's an hour and a half drive, go there, it's amazing.
It looked amazing. She buries him in the leaves and all that, and the surrounding area was, I mean, it was just gorgeous, Justin. Absolutely gorgeous. So, you know, she knew little things. She obviously researched some things, but on the most part, she needed somebody. She was alone. So that vulnerability, that comes across, like you said, that character needed that. It needed that to say, look, I'm alone. Will you meet me for dinner? Will you meet me for this? Can we do this together? All that stuff.
However, if I can jump in at that point, that's also the same kind of, those are very feminine, wild points. Why does she visit for a month if Pino is just going to go around tile manufacturers all the time? Because she wants to see Dev.
Yeah.
Why does she arrange these great things? And then she basically knows Pino's not going to make it so that she can spend time with Dev again. Mm. She keeps doing these things because she wants to see Dev. There's no reason on earth. You know, she's working at the pasta shop. Why would she just jump off for a month just to be with Pino when he's just going to be working the whole time? It's an excuse because she wants to see Dev.
Yeah, but it's like any story or any maybe Bollywood story that first they actually seem like friends, don't they? They when you see the relationship start from the start of the season, and then even in the middle of the season, you don't see the click. You just see that they're mates, and then slowly it's so well developed that they keep meeting, and then Dev starts thinking things. Then you start seeing her thinking things, and the regular meeting, and then he goes to Arnold and speaks to him, all that stuff. But for the first half, it was just mates. That's why
she's engaged.
Exactly. It was just mates, but they developed that really well. So, like, I know what you're saying. Why did she come for a month and stuff? But maybe she just wanted to come and see her friend, at times. But then it developed, I thought, because they were spending so much time together that there were then sparks. I mean, Justin, do you see that? Jess is coming from him from a point of view that he thinks she kind of probably wanted that to happen. But I kind of saw it develop. Rather than force,
I think I saw it more developed. It's the type of thing where I think that it was already always there for him, but it just wasn't something that he had put A and B together and thought and realized in his head, like, oh, I do have these feelings for, because that happens all the time with people where they don't know they have feelings for someone until they actually kind of realize, like, oh, this is why I feel like I like being around this person this much. And I feel that's kind of how that happened. And, just being around her made him happier. And so I don't feel like it was at all forced. I think it's more of a developmental type of thing. And I think from her perspective, I think it's really similar too, of the more time they spent together, the more she realizes that I have these feelings for him. Because they wouldn't have spent that much time together if there was... I don't think that there was any sort of implication of the fact that there's a quote-unquote friendship other than the fact that there's the language barrier in Italy that makes for cute misunderstandings.
Yeah, I just thought they were a perfect fit once they did match up. I thought it was really cute. It was done well. But the other thing that I thought from him, and this is one of the episodes, the dating episode, I just thought was done so well. Like, going to Whole Foods, can I pick you up anything? Like, that's actually tweeted a lot, Loads of people are tweeting it and using it now. It's become kind of a thing. That's the power of a TV show doing something that's quite funny. And like how he shows the woman checks his phone and he goes, I bet you say that to everyone. And she goes, I bet you. And he goes, no. And then all of his messages are the same thing. And he gets responses for all of them. And just that episode meeting different people and how he meets that blogger who he's actually a fan of, but she's dead, like, weird. And then, she tells him she's got a boyfriend. He's like, what? Like,
who she met through the app.
Yeah.
Which I guess is like, I guess the app is like a mock form of Tinder.
Yeah, it's so funny, mate. Such a good episode. Again, there were some belters, weren't there?
I think that's one of the themes, isn't it? Technology in Master of None, especially kind of the interaction, but like how technology is a conduit between males and females or relationships in general.
Yes.
You've got this kind of Tinder kind of copycat called Love at First Sight. In the first series, there were quite a few different references. You're constantly seeing texting on iPhones and things like
that.
Or
they're texting each other when they're talking about tiles, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And, Arnold keeps sending gifts of himself with "Hi, cutie," and all this kind of stuff. But this is how people interact now. I mean, me and my wife got together before Tinder existed, and thank God, basically, because I've never been single when Tinder was a thing, and it actually frightens me. So watching all this vicariously, I'm not, it's kind of like it's quite an intriguing experience, I guess. I don't know what Justin's situation is like that, but...
I met my girlfriend through online dating, so I watched that episode, saw the bad dates, saw the good dates, saw the amazing lack of... Saw the when you're going in for something and the other person doesn't want it, like, that happens. Not awesome. Not cool to deal with. Not a lot of fun. Makes for a... having a super awkward 30-block cab ride home afterwards... really awkward. I've never had that happen to me.
Crazy.
It makes me glad that I'm no longer in the market and world of dating, because it's so awkward. Well, I mean, that's what it made it look like. And I think that's what a lot of people, at least the people who I know who are still single, who, you know, date on the internet, it really kind of is more like a meat market than it is a desire to actually meet someone who you actually, you know, want to spend time with, to a lot of people.
Fantastic. You know what? We're going to be running out of time, so I know there's some things that we both want to talk about here yet. Like, can we just have a quick chat about his parents, his real parents that are actually in the show? Jessel, quick words on the parents, because they were fantastic.
I just love them so much. I can't believe we've got this far without talking about them properly. They're just absolutely... His father is just brilliant. He's got such a sense of comic timing and flair. And his mother is just the complete opposite. Everything is just grounded and nothing is funny to her, effectively. And it's just so funny. They're not even like my parents, but they remind me of my parents just really subtly. Like, the kind of way that I disappoint my parents is just, it's just so akin to how, you know, you love them, they love you, but yeah, they're still disappointed in you.
Yeah, like the iPad stuff's just hilarious. You know, when he's like, can you fix my iPad? No, I gotta go watch a movie. And then he just goes into flashback about when he's a kid and how his toy was broken by his brother and all this. And I was like, what the hell? Like, it's just brilliant. He's great though. His dad is just so funny in all the restaurants, in everything, Mr. Chow's, everything. Justin, he nails it, doesn't he?
I mean, I think the funniest part of any of them is when Dev goes with his father to work and sees the collection of things that Dev's father has pulled out of people's stomachs. but if you shove something up your own ass, you can keep that.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Okay, and can we just discuss your fave scenes? If it, one or two of your favorite scenes of the show, Jess.
Oh, there are so many. I guess one of my favorite ones was episode 7 of the first series, which was a kind of short little vignette where they've left a party. And so Aziz and Arnold have left a party and they're just walking back really casually in the dark at night. And the one time they take a shortcut through a park, and Condola Rashad's character, she has exactly the same experience of leaving and everything, but everything is different for her because she's just shit scared at every single point. She's got her hand on her phone, like ready to dial 911 and all this kind of stuff. And it triggered off this whole feminist aspect to the episode. I just thought that was really clever. You don't really see that. You don't see the difference between how, you know, us guys can generally just walk around at night without too many worries.
Brilliant,
for women, it is so different.
So well done, wasn't it? I mean, I just love all the comedy skit parts. They just make me laugh so much. Justin, you tell me, what are your favorite scenes? Sorry,
I like any time that Aziz is confronted with Tickler's famous drummies.
Even if he misses a plane.
Yeah. Also, shout out to the restaurant that is really Tickler's famous drummies, which is Hometown Barbecue in Red Hook, Brooklyn, because it's really, really awesome.
Wow. I like every time they're eating, every time he's sticking pasta down his face, whatever. I absolutely love all those bits. And like the co-creator even said, you know, like it became a huge character in the show, became food. You know, food was like a major part of this show. No matter what anyone says, they were always munching on something or eating something or drinking something, whatever it was. You know, being at a restaurant was huge for this show. And it was so good. So well done. And they really do make you hungry. I'm hungry now, man. Jesus. What are your thoughts on that, Jess, about the food side of things?
Yeah, I think there's two, like you're saying, I think there's food and music. And the food aspect is just overbearing. Like, I was just salivating in every single episode, pretty much. And music, I read an article of Pitchfork, actually. They were talking about how interesting it is, the way that Master of None incorporates music. And it's kind of realistic how we listen to it. And there are so many great songs as well throughout. It's just genius.
Yeah, yeah.
And he
Return of the Mac came on at one point, and I was like, yes. Yeah.
And the Venger bus is coming. Yeah. I've had that song in my head for 5 days.
I was trying to get rid of it. Thanks.
I just love it. That even they had some Bollywood as well at some of the end of summer episodes. You know, it's just really good. They know exactly what they're doing because they've got the mix of the culture, you know, that both sides of it, like Aziz has. And it just, I just think just really well done. It's perfect for someone like me, this show. And I'm actually quite sad that there's not going to be a third season for a long, long time, you know? I really do.
And you're probably not going to get Chef Jeff in season 3 at all.
No, not at all. Not after that. And Chef Jeff, what? Talk to me about Chef Jeff, Justin, before we go. Because, again, a really good character. And he really made this season, I thought. With the especially the food parts. He was another reason why the food was I don't know, just... You just wanted to eat. He was just so good at how he was acting with it and stuff. You know what I mean?
I mean, they did a great job of Chef Jeff's. Obviously, I think just a mock up on Anthony Bourdain. If he's not, then it's remarkable how they came up with something independently. But I'm a huge Anthony Bourdain fan, so seeing Chef Jeff in there. I mean, I obviously they didn't need to put something to turn it into drama because you knew the entire time that he was on screen that they were gonna do something untoward with that character. Like, I felt like that was kind of scripted.
He was always telling, you know, Dev to get in there, get in there, get in there. And if he wasn't going to get in there, he would. And then he'd just wink and move on. You know what I mean? He was, yeah. You could tell he was seedy, man. You could tell.
Bobby Cannavale does that well in a lot of other TV roles he does, whether or not he's playing a psycho. I think every other TV role I've seen him in besides Will and Grace, he's played an absolute psycho and done it really well.
Yeah, he was great. Jess, what are your thoughts on Chef Jeff?
Yeah, he was brilliant. He kind of reminded me of Joe Pesci in Goodfellas. It's kind of like, you know, you're willing to have a laugh with this guy up to a point, and you don't quite know where you stand with him, and he holds all the power. So Dev just has to be a little bit careful at times. And then suddenly he'll just explode and think, oh, yes, this is the greatest idea. Let's do a show together and all this kind of stuff. He was really brilliant, and he kind of helped move everything forward. I mean, Dev's career doesn't get that much of a shout out throughout either season, really.
But it's going to a really good place in this season. He's about to make it, and then fucking controversy at that talk show that they're on. Oh, my God, like so awkward.
And then it gets so Raven.
Yeah, it does.
And I just love how he manages to confuse the words condemn and condone.
Again, so well written, isn't it? So well written. Like, just...
That is not a good turn of phrase.
It was perfectly written, though. Like, it can happen to the guy who's nervous, who's shaking in a public place, you know, like that on TV. You're like, whoa. Okay, I could see it happening to someone like me, you know, saying the wrong thing. I just thought, wow, amazing. Justin, before we go, any thoughts on all the food places? Did you want to talk about?
I've eaten a fair amount of them, but the only one that I really have a thought on is the one where he takes his cousin, who's actually his cousin, by the way. It's his cousin Harris that he does a lot of his bit about. His older bit about is actually, that's actually him. But the place that they go eat pork, or turns out it's a sandwich place around the corner from me that I've yet to try. And
that was amazing. That was just religion. What a brilliant episode again. That was brave. Oh, it is brave. Because he could get, you know, oh my God.
Shit. Yeah.
I can identify that with too, because I come from a culture that doesn't eat pork.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah.
Love pork.
Mate, imagine though that he is an Indian Muslim, okay? And then he's lying about it to his family, you know? And then he can't lie anymore.
And then Tupac comes in with "Only God can judge me."
It's brilliant. It's so well.
But it is. But that's, I mean, and that goes back to that religion episode, which I also think is just phenomenal. And the whole food aspect of it, it kind of ties into, you know, and he says it to his father. It's, I get the aspect of religion. It has cultural value to me, to you, but it doesn't to me. The thing that has cultural value to Dev and allows him to identify with people his own age is actually food.
100%. That's his religion. Food is his religion. He worships food. That is everything. And they go through that in terms of the storyline. So well written in terms of how he loves pasta in the first one, and then she gets him a pasta maker, and then he makes the pasta, and then in the end, when he has to turn to something, when he's really down, he goes to Italy to make his favorite dish, you know, he goes to make pasta, goes to learn how to make it from fresh. So the whole of that story, and then it comes back into the season 2, where he's doing it and then he comes back. It's just so well, I don't know, it's so well rounded, isn't it? They are pretty much geniuses in how they've done this show, I think.
Allora.
It's there finally. Someone said it. Well.
Jessel,
well, allora. Well, we need to finish up, but before we do, Jessel, is there anything that you think we've missed that we should talk about in terms of this show?
Well, okay. What about the ending? The very final ending?
Yes, we
what
must
do you,
talk
What do you guys
about
think about that?
I've actually read quotes about it, so I can spoil what he said. But, Justin, you go first. What do you think about the ending?
I like a good cliffhanger.
Yeah.
It gives me a reason to watch into the next season. It's one of those things that I've grown to. I grew to originally hate it with some TV, because I remember two of the first shows that I really obsessed about were Twin Peaks, which was a little before my time, but then I kind of watched it later in my teenage years and into the beginning of college. And then The Sopranos, which, you know, The Sopranos came off the air when I was 18 years old and finished in my mid-20s. And they both showed me that you don't need to tie up everything so nice and neatly for it to be entertaining. Like, you know, we all have imaginations and maybe we should allow those to carry on after the credits have rolled.
Yes, for sure. And obviously, a lot of us want to believe that it's not the end. So, I mean, Jessel, what are your thoughts on the ending? What do you actually think? Are they together? Or, and let's just say, let's spoil the ending. Basically, she's decided to go back to her fiancé, Pino. What a great name. After kissing Dev, that is, and all that great romantic episode they had. And then she's gone back, and then he's kind of just lumbering around, like Justin said earlier, bumps into his old girlfriend. He's found the number as well for the one that he met in Italy.
Sarah.
Yes.
Yes.
So all that's kicking off. He's thinking, right, you know, there's always another avenue. And then all of a sudden, she's in bed with him right at the last scene, before it fades to black, is they're both facing each other in bed or turn to each other in bed. And then you think, what? So, you know, what do you think, Jess?
Yeah, I kind of like it when it's left open to interpretation. So I don't know the kind of spoilers about what he said or anything like that. But
well, he's saying pretty much the same as what you just said there. He just said that we wanted to do something. For one, he doesn't know when there's going to be a season 3. He doesn't even know if there's going to be a season 3 because of his life. As in, he has nothing now to write. He has categorically stated he has nothing to write for season 3. He has to experience new things to be able to write a season 3. So that tells me it's nowhere near coming. So what are they going to think about in terms of it as a writer? You're going to leave it open, aren't you? And if it's never coming back, leave it open where it can either be good or bad. So it can either be a dream that they're facing each other, or she's dumped her boyfriend, her fiance, to be with Dev. So he's just said, we wanted to leave it open to interpretation, open to your imagination, like you just said, and what Justin just said as well. So both of you spot on in terms of what Aziz actually wanted, is that he just wanted it to be for you to think about and debate. So there you
go. Yeah, which again is something that exactly the same happens in Before Sunset. I really think they must have watched that film when kind of creating this season. There's so many similarities, even the way she talks and stuff. I don't know if you guys have ever watched that trilogy, but I'd highly recommend it. It's really excellent.
I've seen it, and I would underscore that highly.
There's stuff like Woody Allen stuff in this. There's First Date. There's Dario Argento. There's loads of films from Italy that they've kind of looked at. Bacon and God's Wrath, Bicycle Thieves that you mentioned earlier.
Big La Ventura.
And then they've also kept the mentions to comic books and stuff, Captain America, stuff like that. They basically tried to cover so much, you know, Goodfellas. I read something in an article where they are basically, the way they've shot a few scenes where he's walking through restaurants or in bars and stuff is similar to what they did in Goodfellas, where you're following them, you know, right on their shoulder.
Yeah.
So they've tried to, like you said, they try to take a lot of, you know, a lot of the cinematic feel is totally different to what you'd normally see on TV. I think it's totally different. So
yeah, I think Netflix enables that as well. You know, I don't know how much they paid him, but it was probably quite a lot, really.
Yeah, and he's directed some of it, so it's their ideas, which is great. But okay, thank you guys. Is there anything else, Justin, before we go, that you think we haven't covered?
I think we've covered what we need to, and anybody who wants to discuss this with us, you know,
we're on Twitter.
You can find avenues.
Yeah, definitely. Jessel, last one. Anything else?
No, I'm in total agreement with Justin. We could pick apart every single part of this, but I think there comes a point where you just have to watch this and enjoy it, basically.
Yeah, you've got to. There's so many other... There must be smaller characters that we've not gone into, especially from the first season as well, earlier on. But I think the main ones we've definitely covered the top 7 or 8 people that are in this show, for sure. So thank you so much, Justin and Jess. That could be a cooking show as well. Justin, anything you want to plug before you go?
No, I'm actually really not working on very much right now. Busy with work, so the free time to do
American
a lot of
Pod
podcasts. It will happen after the season. Okay. I would like to make sure that we have top 4, so my consistent positivity through the season can carry into the off season.
Good man. And Jess, will we be hearing more from you on AI?
I hope so, Gags. I hope the feedback is good.
Yes.
People can catch me at Jessal TV for everything, which is Jesal TV. So that's Twitter, Facebook, my website, all that kind of stuff. The only difference is my Instagram handle, which is nipplesandtoes23.
Oh my god, that's brilliant. I'll need to go and check if that actually exists. No, I won't.
It does exist, yeah.
I'll make sure I get you a really specially made chocolate milk if we ever meet up in real life.
Oh god, Justin, what's your Twitter handle, mate, for everybody?
I'm at Rolls on Shabbos. It's a Big Lebowski reference. I am not a religious Jew.
Okay, cool. And also, you can find me on at Gagstandin, at On the Box, at Anfield Index, and at pretty much everything else. There's so many. If you want to talk to us, you can always contact us on all of those. There's also a Facebook page now, facebook.com/onthebox. You can follow that. The pod will be shared there too. And also news and everything new. It's something that we've just kicked off. It's doing well. If you can go and follow that or give it a like, we'd appreciate it. Engage with us. That'd be even better. Thank you so much for listening. The last few pods have done fantastically well. Really appreciate all your support. One thing we do ask for is feedback. So if you're listening, please do just drop us a tweet. These guys are giving up their time. You know, we've all done it as well. You know, me too. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to give you a retweet and have a discussion. No problems at all. And this one's a bit more of a better feel than the last one, which was 13 Reasons Why. So if you have seen that show, you haven't, go and check it out. There's so many more. Westworld, Stranger Things. Oh my God. We've covered pretty much loads, and I think we're going back in time for a bit of Friends and Lost in the next few weeks, so those are also coming up, so we won't forget the old ones. Once again, thank you very much for listening. Thank you to my great guests. Go and watch Master of None, one of the best shows out there. Thank you.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.